Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Friday, January 27th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. It's Friday, the weekend's approaching, and it's been an intense week. And it's going to culminate with a guest we've very much been looking forward to. His name is Bill Schneblin, and he is the subject of this 9-disc DVD called Interview with an Ex-Vampire. I'm going to open this up and show you. There's 9 different discs inside of here. You can see them right there. And Lisa and myself, over the last couple weeks, have been watching this, and it's absolutely riveting. Now, Bill was an ex-Catholic priest. He was an ex-Freemason. He was an ex-witch. He was an ex-Satanist, an ex-Mormon, and, as the title implies, an ex-vampire. Right now, Bill is a born-again Christian, and he's also an author of books such as Blood on the Doorpost.
I think he's also a minister now, too.
And a minister, and also Lucifer Dethroned. So we'd like to welcome Mr. Bill Schneblin to Wing TV.
Welcome.
How you doing, Bill?
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you on. Now, before we get started, and we got a lot of intense questions for you, tell everybody how they can find this DVD set. I know it's on the Wing TV homepage, but also, where else can they find it, and how can they find your website?
Well, sure. Our website, the name of our ministry is With One Accord,
okay.
Just like in Acts chapter 2. And our website, therefore, is With One Accord, WITHONEACCORD .org.
Okay.
And you can also reach us by phone at 608-268-3792.
And the website for the producers of this is www.xvampire.com, I believe?
That's correct. Yes, right. It's hard to miss that one.
Very good. Now, Bill, as the title of this DVD implies, Interview with an Ex-Vampire, I want to jump right into things here, and I don't want you to be squeamish about this. Let everyone know what it was like when you finally became a vampire, when you actually bit into somebody, when you drank blood. Were you squeamish about it? What thoughts were going through your heads? Give everybody an impression of what was going on during these very turbulent times.
Well, yeah, actually, you know, I wasn't the least bit squeamish because I had been led to believe by years of involvement in various false religions that this was actually a very high calling to drink people's blood, because you're performing like a transformative ritual on someone when you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had been led to believe by people who brought me into this that this was in fact what Jesus had done. That Lazarus, when Jesus raised him up from the dead, that he was the world's first vampire. And so therefore, I mean, you know, this is the trouble. If you don't know your Bible, if you don't know your history, you can get dragged into these kind of strange organizations, and that's what happened to me. But it was very sensuous, it was very erotic. The women who were, actually in my covens that we had under us, because we had several covens, that we were high priest, my wife was high priestess of,
mm-hmm.
They were more than delighted to have me, you know, tap their veins every so often so that I could, you know, slake my thirst for human blood.
That's just amazing.
It's kind of unimaginable. Okay, you did this in-depth interview with a woman named Stephanie Ralph, and on this interview you discussed various religions, Mormonism, Wicca, Freemasonry, Catholics, you ran the gamut. What I'd like to know is, what is the tie that binds these different religious belief systems to the occult?
Well, and this is probably going to maybe not surprise some of your viewers, but all of these groups have one thing in common. To a greater or lesser degree, they have occultic overtones in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like for example, the Masons, for example, are a secret religion. Where everything is kept secret, guarded by blood oaths, just like the witches,
mm-hmm.
and even in the Mormon Church, they have their temples where you go and you have secret handshakes and signs and words and whatever before you can get into this elite organization. So all of these groups, to a degree, are either Gnostic in nature,
mm-hmm.
or else they're occult the idea of these miracles, of these lying signs and wonders, like, you know, you hear these stories of bleeding statues and bleeding crucifixes, and even the dogma, which is the central dogma of Catholicism, is that you can take bread and wine, and by saying some words over it, poof, you know, you can turn into the body and the blood of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all these different groups have either this idea of power or this idea of secret knowledge. And that's what basically bound them all together. And those were like the two great themes that ran through my life for the first 35 years of my life, was a quest for wisdom, a quest for this supposedly undefiled secret Gnostic knowledge, and, of course, to a lesser degree, even the quest for power.
Okay. Now, as Lisa said, you've mentioned quite a few religions in these 9 DVDs, Catholicism, Mormonism, and on, but one you didn't mention was the Jewish Talmud. And in this book, they have quite a few very graphic scenes mm-hmm. where Christ is being boiled in excrement. They say the Virgin Mary was a prostitute. And about a third of the entire text is very anti-Christian. So on the scale of evil compared to these other religions, where would you put the Talmud?
Well, obviously there's a lot of anti-Christian stuff in there, and I must say I'm not as much of a student of that as I am of these other things, but I'm sure anything that obviously seeks to defame the name of Christ, and I know there's other things in there that deal with very reprehensible things.
Mm-hmm.
I think apostate, you know, Talmudism or Judaism, whatever you want to call it, could also be very dangerous. You know, because again, anything that draws us away from, you know, Jesus, and of course there's a lot of hateful stuff in there against him, that can be very problematic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm certainly not trying to say that all any more than I'm saying all Mormons are evil,
right,
or all Masons are evil, or all Catholics are evil. All Jews aren't evil either. Most of them are very fine people. But the religious system that holds them all in thrall is the problem.
We couldn't agree more.
On disc 2, Bill, you said that the Jesuits wrote a lot of the degrees in Scottish Freemasonry. Now, we also know that Adam Weishaupt, founder of the Illuminati, was a Jesuit, as is Hans Kolbenbach, also known as the Black Pope. There's a lot of controversy and debate on the Internet as to who actually sits atop this religious control pyramid. Is it the Jesuits, is it the Zionists, or is it a combination of groups?
Well, of course, actually, from my understanding, and of course you may get other opinions from other people, but from my understanding, at the very pinnacle of this organization are what are called the 9 Unknown Men.
Uh-huh.
And they're different. They're men, one man over each continent. Like there's an Illuminatus Primus, they're called, over North America, over South America, etc. You get the idea.
Uh-huh.
Now, over them are what are called the 7. And the 7, I've never dealt with them, but I have been led to believe they are actually fallen angels in, you know, humanoid, more or less, form. And so they aren't even human beings. Now, in terms of the organizational thing, that's the irony of all this, is that you can have, there, for example, if he's still alive, there's an extremely evil man in Israel who is the head of he's kind of like the unknown man over Israel. His
mm-hmm.
code name is Mordecai. And he's more or less in charge of the Zionist wing of all of this.
Okay.
Bad sense of the word Zionism, because obviously the word Zion is in the scriptures, you know. But
what's his name
on
again?
The other hand, Mordecai. We have, you know, the lower level Illuminati wing, you know, people like the Rothschilds and whatever. And of course, there certainly is the Jesuits and the Vatican and the idea of the Black Pope. All of these things are all part of the same warp and woof, and the funny thing is they will pretend on a lower level to fight one another,
uh-huh.
create what's called this Hegelian dialectic.
Yeah.
But at the highest level, they're all sitting around the same table, planning the same plans.
That's right. Now, Bill, before I get into my next question, I'd be remiss. Before this show, the last couple of days, we've been looking on the Internet, and actually people have been contacting us before the show, critical of you. I'm sure this isn't any news to you. How do you respond to your critics?
Well, I guess it depends on what, I mean, you know, it can be a theological critic, or you can be saying that I'm basically a liar and a deceiver and I never did any of the stuff I say I did.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, all I can tell you is when I know my story is pretty incredible. So when we came out with our very first book back in 1987, nearly 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
it was called Mormonism's Temple of Doom, and I and my co-author, we we put together a chronology of all of my, you know, things that I had done. We put together certificates from various organizations. They're all in the back of the book. So when people say, well, he's lying about this, or he was never a Mormon, he was never a Mason, well, it's all there. Uh-huh. I mean, and in fact, I was, and of course, it depends, again, on who you trust and who you want to believe. But, again, 20 years ago, I was on with Dr. Walter Martin, who was well-known then as the king, kind of the king of the cult busters. He was the author of the book Kingdom of the Cults and the founder of the Christian Research Institute. Mm-hmm. And he had me on his radio show, and he said, and I'm a direct quoting here, that my credentials cannot be fairly challenged.
Very good. Well, that's what we wanted to do. That's what we wanted to lay out there, and you know, it's basically people have to look into this and make up their own minds.
Also, some of these sites are Wiccan and Masonic sites,
right.
So what else are they going to say?
Well, yeah, like I know one of the big offenders is MasonicInfo.com. I'll give them a free plug. You know, and if you look at my timeline, which, again, has been out there for anybody to look at, you know, for nearly 20 years, you can see that it boggles people's minds. I know that I was into this many things,
yeah.
But what can I say? I was an overachiever.
Now, certainly well-rounded, Bill.
Now, Bill, Harry Houdini, the famous stage magician, spent a good part of the latter part of his life exposing the phony spiritualists of his time. This was in the early 1900s. But when he came upon a person named Edgar Cayce, he was trying everything he could to debunk Edgar Cayce. And he was one of the few, if the only one, that Houdini came away from stumped, that he couldn't debunk. What can you tell us about Edgar Cayce?
Well, we were involved with his organization for a while when we were mediums, because that was one other thing I also did. I was involved with a spiritualist-type organization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, he was raised in the Bible Belt, Cayce was, and he was a, as I understand it, a Methodist Sunday school teacher, and this whole thing kind of fell on him. I mean, I think he had some kind of headaches or something,
right.
And you know, he just started going into these trances, and at first he was mainly doing, like, recommending healings for people, and then toward the end of his career, he was also going into, you know, like, oh, well, you had a life in Atlantis, and,
right.
and this kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, I don't doubt the guy was sincere. I would have to concur in my, you know, humble opinion with Mr. Houdini that he, whatever was going on was genuine. I don't think he was a fraud. And I think he may have just gotten led down the wrong path, because obviously some of what he said wasn't true. Like he prophesied that, you know, the California was going to fall off into the Pacific Ocean in the late 90s. Obviously that didn't happen, although some people maybe wish it did, but it didn't. And, you know, there's all kinds of different things where he said something would happen and it has not come to pass.
It seemed like he ran into trouble with his prophecies, but his healings were very much right on.
Yes, and of course, you know, it. I don't know what entity was speaking for him, if it was originally from the Lord or not. I mean, that's between him and the Almighty. But I do know that you have to measure someone by their doctrine. When they start teaching things, you know, there's two tests of a prophet in the Torah. And in Deuteronomy 13 and Deuteronomy 18, we are told that, number one, if they make false prophecies, then you know they're not from God. And number two, if they teach doctrines which lead people away from the truth of the Bible, they're not of God. And, of course, reincarnation is not taught in the Scriptures. So, no problem there.
Bill, John Paul II, you said he was a mastermind of satanic illusion, and he was on his way to hell faster than greased lightning. You also said that Catholicism is nothing more than thinly veiled paganism. Elaborate a little bit. What's going on with John Paul II?
Well, I mean, no, I can't judge the man's heart. I can only judge his actions. And I know that he, in his own life, strayed from the Catholicism of his own birth. I mean, he was doing things in the last 15 years of his ministry as Pope where he was, you know, kissing the Quran, saying the Quran, you know, which is the holy book of Islam, was a sacred book just like the Bible. Of course, that's total nonsense from the standpoint of the Scriptures, or even from Catholicism. He went to a Hindu priestess and had the mark of Shiva put on his forehead. He's done all kinds of weird ecumenical things. And all that just is aside from the fact that Catholicism itself has very serious problems. I mean, it's got idolatry because people are worshiping, you know, statues. They're worshiping the wafer, you know, the Blessed Sacrament of the Eucharist. kids, things like that. I mean, if you go on to EWTN, which is their big, you know, TV network, every day you can see the Blessed Sacrament exposed, you know, and people are bowing down before it in this big monstrance. And, I mean, I was raised Catholic.
I was a Catholic seminarian,
and I was ordained in the old Catholic priesthood, so I know whereof I speak. And again, the essence of any of these groups that are counterfeit, remember, a counterfeit looks 99% genuine. Catholicism looks really good. You know, they have orphanages, they have, you know, schools and colleges, and they a lot of them are very nice people, but yet, just like rat poison is 95% good food and 5% arsenic, well, that's the state with Catholicism. The spiritual poison in it will kill you. And I know I've talked to many, many Catholics over the last 20 years, and not one of them knew for sure they were going to heaven.
Very interesting.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
Now, another very famous magician, this is a different kind of magician, M-A-G-I-C-K, is Aleister Crowley. In his book, The Book of the Law, he says, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." What are people supposed to take from this, and what's your impression? Was this guy real? Was he a huckster?
Well, I mean, I think he was real in the sense that he really believed what he was doing. I think kind of like his follower, if you will, in the next generation, Anton LaVey, he was also a showman.
Right.
Crowley was a very deep scholar of both classical literature, of Eastern literature, and of magical literature. The guy was brilliant, but he was also, he went out of his way to try and shock people and to make them think he was evil, and in many ways he was. The funny thing about him is he was raised in a biblical home. He was raised Plymouth Brethren, but he had this real strict mother that just drove him crazy, and he ended up just sort of becoming the ultimate preacher's kid nightmare, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I think he really did have some kind of a contact in 1904 with this, what he called Praetor Human Intelligence, IWAS, and he produced this book, which is like an anti-Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was intended to replace biblical Christianity with what he called Crowleyanity, or the religion of Thelema. And the difficulty is that, again, it doesn't make sense. The prophecies that are in the Book of the Law did not come to pass. And at the same time, it's very hateful. I mean, if you read especially the third, because we just have to memorize the Book of the Law, because we were what were called Thelemites. We were followers of his.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, I mean, there's some very hateful stuff in that book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bill, regarding the Mormons, now, we knew that the Mormons have an obsession with the dead and genealogy, but what we didn't know is that they have a replica of the Oval Office in their Silver Springs, Maryland temple. Tell everyone why they have that there, if the Mormon congregation is aware of this, and what kind of reaction have they gotten ever from the government, if any?
Well, first of all, this is not common knowledge. I mean, it may be once this DVD and this TV show go out on the air, but they believe their destiny is to more or less take over the government of the United States. There was an ancient prophecy, well, not ancient, I mean 150 years old, where I think it was Brigham Young said that there would come a time when the Constitution, which they believe is an inspired document, by the way, when the Constitution of the U.S. would hang by a thread, that the elders of Israel, and this is a virtually direct quote from the prophecy, would come along and save the Constitution, and one mighty and strong, quote-unquote, that's the word, would assume control over the United States government. So with that idea in mind, they have been trying to gain more and more legitimacy over the last generation. You know, the people like Orrin Hatch, who's a very highly respected,
right,
you know, senator, a conservative man who's a Mormon. They were trying for many years to get him to be a vice presidential candidate.
Uh-huh.
And then what they were thinking would happen is that God, quote unquote, would strike down the president, and then the Mormon vice president would of course assume power, and then he would be declared prophet of the Mormon Church, and then he would basically rule America as the benign dictatorship on behalf of Jesus Christ.
Their followers really believe this stuff?
Yes, yes. I mean, and now not all of them know about this thing about the Oval Office having a duplicate. As far as whether or not the government knows about this, I imagine they do, because, frankly, there's very high level cross-pollination between the high-level Mormons and the power elite in Washington, D.C. In fact, many of the, I mean, you'd be amazed at the number of who are actually Mormons.
Like the FBI and CIA and so forth.
Yes, exactly that. Brent Scowcroft comes to mind as the most obvious example.
Yeah. Now, Bill, you didn't cover this in this interview with an ex-vampire, but I know you have an interest in UFOs, and there's a lot of books out there that talk about ancient Sumeria. This is the cradle of civilization. And if you look into these Sumerian texts and their cylinders, there's a lot of talk about UFO intervention, genetic engineering of human beings. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I believe that's very much in the devil's plan for these last days, because Jesus warned us that as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And, of course, in Genesis 6, the days of Noah was when the sons of God came down to the daughters of men, and they bore children of them, the mighty men of renown, the Nephilim, whatever word you want to use. Mm-hmm. So I know that when I was involved with black magic and with the Illuminati, that they were working on various forms of genetic manipulation of the human genome, even before the secular people had had it, you know, supposedly mapped. I really believe we already know what's in the human genome and had to do it 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is very much part of the devil's plan for the end game, because he's trying to raise up an army to oppose the army of the Almighty. And this is partly how he thinks he's going to do it, by defiling human DNA with fallen angel DNA.
Do you think a staged UFO could be something the government is planning to take more control over?
Well, I'm not sure if the government, in other words, the exoteric government is planning it, the outer court, so to speak. I know that it's one of the things that they have, the shadow government is planning. You know, you've got to realize the devil is, you know, he doesn't know what the Almighty is going to do. And so he has 8 or 10 different little gambits out there, trying to make something happen. And he doesn't know which one is going to get shot down and which one isn't. But I know one of the plans they had in the offing was indeed to have a UFO, a real nuts and bolts spacecraft, come down and land the White House lawn or wherever it might be, and have a Jesus figure come out of it.
Wow,
and say, hi, I'm the second coming of Jesus, and he's wearing a silver lamé space suit, kind of like Klaatu, you know, on the day of still, and declare peace on earth and goodwill toward men, and everybody's just going to be so awestruck by this, because his gospel will be a totally different gospel, of course.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We've been very deeply interested in studying an ancient group of people known as the Essenes. We've learned that John the Baptist was an Essene, his parents were Essenes, and Jesus was very much influenced by this group of people. So let me ask you, why was the religious hierarchy of Jesus' time so threatened by the Essenes when they seem to be at the very root of the religious belief systems that have evolved throughout history? Why don't we ever hear about the Essenes?
Well, I mean, you do hear about them, but unfortunately you hear about them more like from either New Age type people,
right,
or else you hear about them from vegetarians or something.
That's right,
but
that's right.
Actually, they were like the Puritans of their day, if you will, in the best sense of the word Puritan.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to, you know, do the same thing that it says in oddly enough, in Paul's epistles, which were probably written after them, you know, to come out from among them and be separate. They believed that the two other Jewish establishment groups at that time, which were the Sadducees and the Pharisees, mm-hmm. had both become pretty much corrupt, and there was a lot of truth in that. And so they just moved out and kind of set up their own community near the Dead Sea. And, of course, we know now from the Dead Sea Scrolls and Qumran and all that, that this thing was a thriving community.
Right.
And I think part of the reason that they have not been talked about much is that people don't really know what to do with them.
Yeah.
They don't fit into the typical pigeonholes. They call people to a very high level of holiness.
But
and while I don't believe, you know, you're saved by being holy or doing good works, I believe you're saved by grace through faith, as it says in Ephesians 2:8-9. I do think that the church has gotten, especially in the last 100 years, very sloppy and very, very antinomian, to use the theological word. And so the Essenes make them very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that the Essenes' teachings are closest to Jesus' teachings, closer than the organized religions we have available today, don't you?
For the most part, I think there's a lot of truth in that, yes.
Yeah. All right, Bill, we have one last question for you, but before we go out today, It's called Interview with an Ex-Vampire. Let me get my finger out of the
way. It's mind-blowing. You'll sit there and you won't take your eyes off this video, and you'll be so disturbed after you'll have to go wash your hands.
Yeah, it's 9 hours plus, but also has a very enlightening,
yes,
or a very fulfilling message to it, because empowering, because you can see, as Lisa shows during the photo gallery at the end here, that you can go from something low to something higher, as Bill's proven. And also, Bill, give your website address.
Of course, sure. It is, again, www.withoneaccord.org. And, yeah, I want to say that, too, is that, you know, I'm a perfect example of no matter how messed up somebody can get, how much dark stuff they bring into their lives, they can be brought out by the power of the blood of the Lamb.
That's right. Now, you mentioned before the Hegelian dialectic, and that was actually my last question for you. And this, of course, is when you bring two opposing forces together and merge them into one. Why is the Hegelian dialectic important to people in this day and age?
Well, because it's one of the foundational precepts of the Illuminati, mm-hmm, is to create chaos and then to create order out of the chaos. So, for example, right now we're in the middle of our supposed war on terror.
Right.
And we've got the Islamic terrorists on one side, and of course we have the great noble Americans on the other side, mm-hmm, even though we helped put together the organization of the guy, mm-hmm, Osama bin Laden, who's running the other side. And that's always the way it is, just like during World War II, Standard Oil was giving fuel to the Nazis,
yep,
when we were at war with them. I mean, this kind of stuff goes on all the time. And I really believe that the same people who pull the strings in Al-Qaeda are also pulling the strings in the White House. And that the people we see that are figureheads, you know, whether it's Osama bin Laden or whether it's the Prime Minister of Britain or whether it's the President of the United States, it doesn't matter what president it is, that they are, in fact, you know, more or less puppets under the control of people who basically tell them either you do what I say or you're going to go down.
Right on,
well,
Bill.
Very, very well said. Interview with an ex-vampire, Bill Schnevelin. And Bill, we spent 9 hours watching this. It was just absolutely amazing.
There's a zillion things to ask you about. We'll have to have you on again.
Yeah, we really do you a disservice by only giving you 25 or 30 minutes. But anybody that wants to hear more about this, he's a scholar on so many different walks of lives that he just blew us away. So, Bill, thanks for being on Wing TV today.
You bet. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We'll be back again on Monday.
Wow.
Have a good weekend out there, everybody. Until then, keep your eyes open because there is a lot going on.
See you all then.